Welcome back to the Village Celebration. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about the history of Memorial Day, because I think you're really going to love this story. Joining us now is Brian Rogers, who is a Village contributor and our historian. Brian, this is really an unknown gem.
Yes. There are several cities around the country that claim the origins of Memorial Day, but after doing a little research, it was interesting to find out that Memorial Day started in Charleston, South Carolina.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Yes.
And it was really started by a group of freedmen.
Right. So in the city of South Carolina, there was a racetrack that at one point all of the slave owners went to enjoy some leisure activities. And during the Civil War, the racetrack was converted into a prison for Union soldiers. And during the war, about 270 of those soldiers died from exposure and malnourishment and dehydration. So it was pretty bad, situation for the soldiers. And shortly after the city was liberated, there was a group of formerly enslaved people, mostly black men, who went to the grave site, because when the soldiers died, they just buried them in the mass grave. And so the story goes they worked for several weeks to give each of the soldiers a proper burial. And then on May 1st of 1866, a group of about 10,000 citizens of the city of Charleston, South Carolina, mostly former slaves and missionaries, went to the newly formed cemetery, and they cleaned up the cemetery and placed flowers on the graves, and they sang songs and they marched around the racetrack. And the New York Tribune reported at the time that it was the way that the procession went. It started with about 3,000 young black school-age kids who had started going to the freedmen schools. And then there was a group of black women, a group of black men, and then some white missionaries and other white citizens of Charleston. And they marched around the racetrack, and they had picnics, and they sang songs, and someone prayed, and they preached, and they cleaned off the graves, and they placed flowers on the graves. And so, surprisingly enough, that if you could be transported back in time, you would definitely recognize it as Memorial Day and some of the same things that we do on Memorial Day today.
Some very familiar traditions, but they started in 1866.
May 1st of 1866. And so there, like I mentioned, there are several cities that claim to be the first Memorial Day, but they were all 66 or later. But the actual first recorded commencement that would look like Memorial Day that someone would recognize would have been that one in Charleston in May 1st of 1866.
You know what I find very interesting? There were 200 or so soldiers, Union soldiers, they decided needed a proper burial. But these were African Americans, formerly enslaved people, who said, hey, look, these guys fought for a cause that ultimately benefited us. Let's give them a proper burial. So the Union soldiers, these were not black soldiers, right?
No, most of them were. Well, we're pretty sure most of them weren't black soldiers, because at the time when Confederate regiments would catch or capture black Union soldiers, they would massacre them. They would kill them all. They would give them no quarter whatsoever, simply because of the fact that they felt that the black Union soldiers were beneath them, and they did not deserve the hospitality that would be given to a white soldier.
So a mass grave suggests that these were white men in that mass grave.
These were white men who were prisoners in the prison that died due to exposure and dehydration and malnourishment. And so they hastily just buried them all in one mass grave. And interestingly enough, when they reburied, when the black people came and reburied the soldiers, they put up an arch that said Martyrs of the Race Course, which has kind of a double meaning.
Absolutely. There's a double entendre there.
Right, because they were, the prison was at a race track, mm-hmm. and the war was about race. Race,
absolutely.
Mm. Even though some people don't like to acknowledge the fact that the Civil War was about race.
Sure it was.
And they want to argue that it was about states' rights and things like that. But it was, yeah, I'll give them states' rights, but it was states' rights to keep slaves. So,
absolutely.
So it all goes back to the race issue.
So that was 1866. So let's fast forward, another 80 years or so, and talk about the integration of the armed forces. Because as we know, from the Tuskegee Airmen, our African American men fought for the country, but the armed forces was segregated just like the rest of the country.
There have been documented African Americans who have fought in every war that the United States has been involved in, as far back as the French and Indian War to the American Revolution to the Civil War to World War I and World War II. But throughout this time, the army was segregated. Mm-hmm. And so the cause to desegregate the army starts early on. But I think in 1941, A. Philip Randolph organized the very first March on Washington, where he told President Roosevelt that he would bring 10,000 men to march on the city of Washington, due to the fact that during the lead up to World War II, when the defense industry was springing up jobs all over the country, African Americans were being discriminated in these jobs and not being mm-hmm. hired for these jobs. And so A. Philip Randolph fought for fair treatment in these positions that were being created as a result of World War II.
And let's just salute A. Philip Randolph right here. He was an African American man with a lot of clout because he was the head of the Pullman Porters Union.
Right, which was, there are some scholars who would argue that the civil rights, the classical civil rights era, was a result of the Pullman Porters Car Union, because they could travel unrestricted throughout mm-hmm. the country. And so they were the messengers who would deliver messages about things that were going on in other parts of the country, because no one suspected them because they had free rein to travel throughout the South.
So here it is, 1941, and he says to President Roosevelt, I'm bringing 10,000 African Americans to the nation's capital. And the president says, wait. Hold on.
He says, what can we do to stop this? And wow. So as a result of the threat of the march, President Roosevelt issued Executive Order 8802, which formed the Fair and Equal Protection Act, which basically said that these jobs that were being created by the defense industry had to be open to African Americans as well as white Americans. And so that was allowed to expire after President Roosevelt died. And
so for a moment, just a moment in time, things looked like they were getting better.
Right.
Now that's a familiar story.
It is. And throughout the history of, throughout African American history in this country, there have been these brief moments where things seem to be changing. And then as a result of that change, the pushback that comes from the majority takes us back two steps. Mm-hmm. And so we see, even today, we see that because of the election of President Barack Obama, the pushback has been tremendous. The number of hate groups are on the rise, and you see, just crazy things going on in race relations in the country.
That's an upcoming topic in The Village with statistics from the Southern Poverty Law Center. But back to the integration of the armed forces. So that was 1941. We move forward, and we get Harry Truman
right
in the White House.
So in 1948, around during Truman's term, he called for a committee to determine what would be the best course to take in civil rights actions. And so they decided that to bring back the FEPA, the Roosevelt Executive Order, and to issue and to start to desegregate the U.S. Armed Services. And so the Truman put forth this legislation, and Southern senators threatened a filibuster. And so Truman pulled back the legislation, but issued Executive Order 9981, which said that there shall be equality of treatment and opportunity for all persons in the armed forces without regard to race, color, religion, or national origin. And thus the United States Armed Services were desegregated. And it took a little while.
Sure.
It wasn't until Korea that the armed services were fully integrated, but it started with Truman's executive order in 1948.
The buck stopped with him.
It did.
So he said, with an executive order.
Yes, with an executive order, which surprises me that so few Americans understand what executive orders are and how they work. And the interesting thing about Truman's executive order is that the next president could have rescinded that executive order, but saw that we were in a position that, you know, things have changed, and so we might as well keep going.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to ask someone to put their life on the line, and then you're not willing to at least afford them an equal opportunity.
Right. And we saw with the World War II veterans returning from Europe that they were catalysts in the civil rights movement, because they had been in Europe and experienced a level of freedom that they had never experienced before. And they were even quoted as saying, how can we go and fight Germans in Europe and come back and still be second class citizens?
Absolutely. There's just something very egregious about that.
Very much so. And even African American publications at the time, you know, the crisis.
The Black Press, yes.
And they had the double V campaign, victory at home and victory abroad.
All right, Brian Rogers, always enlightening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's how Memorial Day started. We are going to take a break, and when we return, we're talking with Patrick Oliver, the noted educator, about vision boards for your children. And then later, we'll talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, which so many of our soldiers are facing these days. So stay with us.